Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday afternoon. Joining us from Cleveland, Ohio, where he has moved on from the warmer climates of Central America for tonight's, Tuesday night's Celtics-Cavaliers game, is Tim Bontemps.
I think you'll be amused to know, Brian, that I had lunch with friend of the pod, Drew Carter, today. And as we got there, it was 65 and sunny.
Play-by-play voice of the Celtics?
The Boston Celtics doing the game Tuesday night. He was like, man, I'm really in on Cleveland. Really like it. It was 65 and sunny outside. 45 minutes later, we walk out of lunch. It's raining. Dark. He's like, what happened? I said, Cleveland happened.
As I tell people, Cleveland. During all those finals years, when it was June in Cleveland, I go, if you don't like Cleveland now, you're never going to like it. This is the best we got right here. Joining us from Dallas, Texas is Bam McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I would tell old Drew Carter, best known as the former college roommate of Jackson, that there's a reason Joakim Noah said nobody ever wants to vacation in Cleveland. Like, aren't you old enough to at least remember that? It wasn't too long.
No, the answer is no. The answer is no. He's not old enough to remember that at all.
Yeah, that was about 2009, I think.
Yeah, he was in elementary school somewhere.
It was 2010. Jackson said he was 12. Jackson said they were 12. It was 2010 because the Cavs beat the Bulls 4-1. And people thought that LeBron might go to Chicago because the Bulls kind of looked really good. And they were good. They were number one seed in the East the next year, but didn't get LeBron. All right. So we have Cavs-Celtics tonight. We're obviously not going to know how that game is going to play out as we do this pod. The Cavs are in a bit of a rough spot right now. Not only have they lost 5 of their last 9, and let me just say again, before we know the results of Tuesday night's game, 2 of those victories were achieved in the final seconds. One, they won when Coby White missed a shot in the final seconds, and one, they won when Max Strus hit a 60-footer. So they're 4-5 with 2 last-second wins, and 2 of the wins are over Washington and Detroit. So the Cavs are in a rough way. Donovan Mitchell is out the rest of this week after getting PRP in his knee. The Cavs are 7-6 this season when Donovan doesn't play going into this game against the Celtics on Tuesday. But there's 3 Eastern Conference teams, the teams that are 1-2-3 as we do this pod in the Eastern Conference, all of whom have very challenging, demanding 7-8 days of schedule here. And I feel like by next Tuesday, or at least by the end of next Tuesday, I don't know if it's when we do this pod next Tuesday, we're going to have a much better feeling about where those 3 teams are in their relative standing and their relative strength. We talked about the Celtics a lot on Sunday when they dismantled the Warriors. By the way, Stats Williams said that so over the last 11 games, the Celtics are plus 243 in this 11-game win streak, 243. If they're able to beat the Cavs tonight by 17 or more, and that's, you know, kind of insulting, especially if we're recording this ahead of a Cavs upset win. But if they're able to do that, it would be the most lopsided 12-game stretch in the history of the league. So that's the kind of way the Celtics are playing. We'll talk more about them later this week. But just to give you an idea of what their schedule is, they just had the Mavericks and Warriors, 2 teams which they slapped by a combined like 80 points. And I'm not even exaggerating. They beat the Mavericks by 30 in the Celtics. They beat the Mavericks by, let me be precise, beat the Mavericks by 28 and the Celtics by 52. So Warriors, I believe that's 80. 52. I believe they won those teams games by 80. So they're in. So they begin a 5-game road trip starting on Tuesday night in Cleveland. Thursday is the big one, which Bontemps, I believe you're intending to head out to Denver for.
I will be there.
Every time Bontemps goes to Denver, a star sits. Every time Bontemps goes to Denver, a star sits. Who? Tatum going to take the night off?
We'll see. Every time I've been to Denver, I think at ESPN, it's been a memorable game. There was the game the first year I was here, Kyrie Irving punted a ball into the stands. The last 2 years, after getting in a back and forth with Jamal Murray when Denver beat them. And the last 2 years, I went there expected to see MVP showdowns, and we didn't see them. So we'll see
you
what happens on
Thursday.
You also
went to Colorado this year for the 76ers training camp.
I did. I was there for training camp also. With James Harden. That's right.
Sort of.
He was there. He was there.
I'll give him credit for that. He showed up.
He did show up.
The rest of the
anyway,
trip.
So the Celtics play the Cavs Tuesday, the Nuggets Thursday. Then they go to Phoenix and play the Suns on Saturday. That game has lost some luster because it looks like Devin Booker is going to be out all this week and maybe much, if not all, of next week with a nasty sprained ankle that he suffered over the weekend. The Suns just cannot get healthy. It's extremely hard to evaluate them. They had a very strange game with Oklahoma City over the weekend where they were, I think they fell down by 20, then outscored the Suns over like the middle quarters by 30 and then ended up losing anyway. So, but anyway, that game is on Saturday. And then the Celtics closes the road trip at Portland and at Utah, which you may say, well, who cares about that? Those should be easy wins, but it's a back-to-back and it's three games and four nights. So
I like their odds regardless. I don't care if they, I don't care if it's a noon, 7 p.m. doubleheader for them.
I do. Yeah. The teeth of the Jazz on the second night of a back-to-back has lessened over the last month where they have kind of given up the ghost.
Listen, it went down the stretch last night. I thought the Lizards were going to earn their W back, but they're still the Lizards. Still nothing but L's.
What is it? Start of February. 14?
I think it's, is it 15 now? I think it's 15.
15 in a row.
You do know what 28 would be, right?
Yes,
I do, in fact, know.
Yes, that would be glorious.
Remind
would be against the Pistons for people who don't know.
Yeah. Back to the top end of these standings.
Bontemps, she might get dispatched for that game.
Ooh, baby.
I probably would try to go see that game. That would be certainly an interesting one.
Nobody better to cover historic losers than the USWB. Blanket just coming stinking it up, baby.
All right, so the Cavs, who are, you know, struggling, you know, without Donovan Mitchell, he has missed three games since the All-Star break. They have lost all three of those. This is their schedule. They played the Knicks on Sunday. Jalen Brunson suffered that knee injury less than a minute into the game while we were recording the podcast, and we did not return. He appears to have avoided major injury, as the Knicks have listed him as questionable. We'll see about whether that plays out, but it seems like it's good news. I thought it was funny, sort of funny, sad that after Jalen got hurt, Tibbs put in Deuce McBride and then played him for the next 47 and a half minutes and never took him off the court in that game. But the Knicks won it, completely daddy balled the Cavs the entire way, to the point where Josh Hart, who has pretty much owned the Cavs dating back to last year's playoffs, after making a basket late in the fourth quarter as the Knicks were taking control of the game, went over to the Cavs bench midway through play and kind of grabbed Donovan Mitchell's diamond or gold necklace, whatever was on that. And like, I don't know, sort of playfully like tasseled it. I don't know what you want to say.
I tell you what, the way he was bullying, I'm surprised he didn't just snatch that thing right off his neck like a Aqib Talib and Michael Crabtree.
Like Debo in Friday.
There you go. That's the way that the Knicks were treating the Cavs.
And, you know, Josh Hart isn't that kind of a trash talk, I don't think, but he just was, you know, he had 19 rebounds in the game and he was guarding Evan Mobley down the stretch. When I say guarding, he was not guarding him. He was just letting him go wherever he wanted and he was defending the paint and they were just totally shutting off Darius Garland in the paint. But let's see what happens to the Cavs tonight. But they're difficult stretch after, you know, they went 18-2, but they really, really benefited from a soft schedule. They had injury problems at that time, but the schedule's turned on them now. Mm-hmm. They play the Knicks, even though ended up without three key players for that whole game, basically, because Julius Randle and OG Anunoby were out. And Mitchell Robinson, too. Mitchell Robinson hasn't played months, so I guess you count him.
I mean, aside from 80% of their starting lineup, the Knicks are pretty healthy.
Right. So, yeah, Mitchell's been out for so long, I didn't even compute that. But, yes, I guess without four starters. So then they have the Celtics on Tuesday. Then back-to-back in Atlanta. The Hawks did not cover themselves in glory with a loss of back-to-back games in Brooklyn, which left the door open for the Nets to come get the 10 seed. It was that the Hawks were up by four going into those two games, and then they lost those two games. That said, it will be without Donovan Mitchell, and it'll be the second night of a back-to-back on the road.
Mitchell, no Trae Young. Buy your tickets now.
Right. Hey, you can get DeJounte Murray, Jalen Johnson. Those guys are good players. So then Friday, the Cavs come back home and play the Timberwolves. Who did they beat on Monday night?
Or
who
Portland. They beat Portland. Hey, what time's that tip-off? Somebody better tell Anthony Edwards. Maybe he can actually be on the floor when the game starts.
7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central. You might want
to... They need Edwards. To tell Ant it tips off at 7:15, just to be sure.
Yes, Ant. In an interesting development, Ant Edwards was at the arena and warmed up and ready to go and then just wasn't on the court.
So he lost track of time. There was no potty problems or nothing like that. Just lost track of time.
The game started and no Ant. And the Wolves had four guys on the floor. It would have been awesome if Chris Finch pulled the what was Gene Hackman's character in Hoosiers? Norman Dale. Yeah.
There you go.
My team's on the floor.
Yes.
We're just playing the Blazers. My team's on the floor.
Exactly.
The Blazers is like, dude, no, we're trying to lose. Would you please get a fifth guy out of here?
So then the Cavs next week have the Suns and Pelicans. And so...
hey, those Pelicans just sitting right there holding firm at 5 in the West.
They are continuing to play well. So the Cavs are in a stretch. By next Tuesday, they will have played the Suns, and we'll have an idea of where they're at. I would, before this game, I would caution making an assumption about the Cavs, because everybody thought that they were cooked. J.B. Bickerstaff, the head coach, was rumored to be on the hot seat when Evan Mobley and Darius Garland went down in December, and then they played some of the best basketball we've seen in the league this year. I don't think it's quite the same, missing their all-NBA player. And by the way,
not going to be all-NBA.
Donovan has already missed 13 games and is going to be right up against the 65 number. So I would say he's probably unlikely to requalify for all-NBA. Let me just take a quick aside here to talk about Donovan Mitchell real quick. The reason that the Supermax rule was put in was basically as a reaction to Kevin Durant leaving the Thunder, and to a lesser extent, LeBron James leaving the Cavs. And the idea was that if you had finished your first max contract, the fun max, and you were headed to the stress max, the idea would be that you would take the stress out of it and you'd be able to pay the player with 7 years of experience, the 35% of the max. And it was,
that's not really why it was done. The reason the Supermax was created was because when Kevin Durant was a free agent in 2016, the Thunder had no way to pay him really more than anybody else to a point where they could really find out whether he was going to stay there or not.
That's what
Isn't
that what I just said?
Well, you said take the, I would say that what it was doing was setting up the choice so the team would know whether the guy would want to stay there or not.
Well, but that's like if Wendy says, Bontemps, you're a bozo, and I say, Bontemps, you're a doofus. We're saying the same thing.
I think it's just worth laying out that that's where it came from, that the Thunder sat there, didn't know if the guy was going to stay or not, and then he left, and they got left with nothing. So now the way this has been set up now, nobody's turned it down yet. But it's been set up so teams know ahead of time either the guy's going to extend or he's not, and then they have the option to decide to trade him or not.
Right. The difference that the Warriors and the Thunder could pay Durant or any free agent over the first 4 years of that contract was negligible.
Yeah, it was a percentage of raises.
It was a couple of percentage points. I mean, it was significant money, but it wasn't enough to be the difference. Now, they could guarantee a fifth year. But, you know, LeBron had sort of set the precedent that getting a fifth year wasn't important because he took two contracts right in a row that were less than 5 years. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the thing about it is that that rule was put in to protect the Oklahoma Cities and Clevelands of the world from a player wanting to go to a bigger market. But in the case of Donovan Mitchell, he is not eligible for the Supermax. The Cavs are not given the protection of the Kevin Durant rule because he was traded during his Fun Max. He signed... If you are traded after your rookie contract, you cannot get the Supermax. So the All-NBA thing, while it's a big deal for a number of players, and obviously for Tyrese Halliburton, whether he is going to get the Rose provision, and Edwards, this was a thing for Pascal Siakam. Siakam wasn't real crazy about
Jaylen Brown.
He got the Supermax, but Pascal Siakam wasn't real crazy about getting traded from the Raptors because if he did, he'd become ineligible for the Supermax if he made All-NBA. And it got to the point where it was kind of clear the Raptors weren't going to give him the Supermax anyway, so he ended up getting traded.
Also, it's pretty clear he wasn't going to be eligible for it, but yes.
Yeah, but you know what? You didn't know that because there's a bunch of guys who are going to be ineligible in what it takes to get the Supermax. You know, like, for example, a guy in that situation this year is Bam Adebayo. Now, in years past, you might say, well, Bam Adebayo, as good as he is, probably going to make All-NBA because you've got these centers who are all studs. I mean, you're penciling in Jokic and Embiid on one and two, you know, teams one and two. And you're like, you know, how does he fit in there? Well, Embiid isn't going to be eligible. Plus, there's no positions on the All-NBA this year. So All-NBA is like, it's impossible to predict. And so the point is, Donovan Mitchell not getting All-NBA isn't going to affect the Cavs' ability to keep him like it would have with other players. So he's headed for the same basically set of decisions that he has this summer and Cleveland offers the extension is not. But he is almost certainly not going to get the 65-game threshold, even though by all accounts he would be a no-brainer, probably second-team All-NBA player at this point.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Okay, that brings us to the team we want to talk about, which is the Bucks, who won their sixth consecutive game on Monday night, 6-0 since the All-Star break. And they leave today, Tuesday, on a very demanding, challenging four-game road trip. And then I think they then have the 76ers and Suns at home after that.
And then they play the Celtics. Your trip is Golden State Wednesday, Lakers Friday, Clippers Sunday, Kings Tuesday, California trip, come home and play the Sixers. Obviously, without Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, he's not playing today with potential concussion after getting hit in the head on Sunday in Dallas. So hopefully, he's all right. Then they play Phoenix at home on Sunday, and then they play Wednesday, the 20th, in Boston against the Celtics. That's their next seven games.
So the Bucks, six in a row. Like I said, they won without Giannis on Monday night. Had a comeback victory.
Still no Middleton either.
Still no Middleton. Dame had 41 points, beating the Clippers, who we just gave a Valentine to McMahon on Sunday. And the Clippers lost that game, blowing the lead, and they were completely flat in the fourth quarter again. Absolutely flat.
It was a combination of Dame time, the Hoop Collective curse, and the Pat Bev boost, baby. The Pat Bev midseason boost is in full effect. You got Pat Bev and Dame just hugging it out on the court after games. I mean, listen. Pat Bev is the epitome of you hate his guts when you have to play him. And when he's on your team, you appreciate the hell out of him. Usually, there have been some exceptions of the latter, but say what you want. The Pat Bev boost is in full effect right now.
Well, so they are one of the top five defensive teams in the league. By the way, the Clippers are 5-6 in their last 11. So the Bucks, after starting 3-7 with Doc Rivers, the nadir, being the loss to Memphis with two guys on 10-day contracts in the starting lineup.
And he said half the Bucks in Cabo.
Right. I think another guy was a two-way. I think they started a two-way and two 10-day guys, but something like that.
I'm not sure the Grizzlies are really fully invested in trying to maximize the number of wins they have the rest of the way.
They won on Monday night, buddy. Kennard put in 25.
That tells you something about the state of the Nets. Go on.
That's true. Who just beat the Hawks twice. Anyway, Giannis Bontemps. Giannis is out with Achilles tendonitis. Was out with that. We'll see where he's out.
Was not a great looking workout Monday night. It's out there. Looked like it was bothering him and left early. Not videos. I mean, obviously it wasn't there. I was watching the videos of it. The videos of it did not look great. And anytime you hear about Achilles soreness or tendonitis or anything with anybody, that's a pretty significant cause for concern, particularly somebody like Giannis with how explosive he's playing all the time.
Doc said that he'd been being bothered by it for two or three games. So it's something that was flaring up on him. We'll see about this road trip. There isn't back-to-backs. These games in California, I don't think there's back-to-backs in any of my.
They don't play a back-to-back until the 21st of March.
Hey, okay, so
a little bit of California sunshine, no back-to-backs. You know, it's a good recipe for healing.
So the Bucks, as of now, have reclaimed second place. We're the number two seed over the Cavs and have taken the edge in the tiebreaker in that as well. And so they were four, I think at the break, they were four games back of the Cavs in the loss column that evaporated quickly. Bontemps, the Bucks are showing some potency. I think we'll know more about them pending Giannis after they go through this road trip, and we'll see how the Celtics, who are out west at the same time, look against some of these top West teams.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Bucks had a really nice win to open the All-Star break in Minnesota. Won that game in Minnesota on national TV. They played a bunch of not very good teams after that. They got the Clippers Monday, had a nice comfort behind win. Clippers on the second night of a back-to-back. But, you know, that was also a weird game. Bucks are down, you know, like McMahon said, no Middleton. He's been out for a while. Giannis doesn't play. The Clippers on the second night of a back-to-back are up 20 and kind of shut off. Like, that was just a weird one all around. But like you said, over the next 3 weeks or 2.5 weeks, they go on this West Coast trip. They get Phoenix at home. They go to Boston. Like, at this point, I would say let's check in with where the Bucks are at on March 21st, the morning of, after that game in Boston. And if they've rolled through this stretch and they continue to have an elite defense and they still look really good, then I think we could say they've made some meaningful steps forward. Given the way they were playing before the break, like you said, that loss in Memphis, I mean, they weren't beating anybody. It's not like they were playing a brutal schedule then. I think it's certainly encouraging the way they're playing, but I would say, I'll feel a lot better about believing in where they're at if they come out of these next seven games playing at the same level they have been after playing the Hornets multiple times, playing a broken down Sixers team, playing the Bulls. Like, you know, let's see them go to Golden State, who's playing better, and win, and go to LA and win, and go to Sac and win.
The Bulls, by the way, just went to Sac and came from behind by 20.
Their third
20-point comeback victory of the season, sir.
Listen, DeMar DeRozan positioned himself as the early front runner for March Cajones Factor Player of the Month by outscoring the Kings by himself in the fourth quarter. Don't you badmouth those Bulls, baby?
I thought we were going to talk about them a little bit later if we end up talking about the Kings like we discussed. But I do want to say, since they came up, Coby White has been awesome.
He's been good
for like 2.5 months now, and looks like he's really ascended to another level as a player, and looks like potential all-star caliber guy next year, but he's like made that a real conversation and has been awesome. And he was awesome in the last few minutes of that game last night, made a couple massive plays to help them get that win in Sacramento. So obviously we've talked a lot about how depressing the Bulls season has been on many levels, but Kobe's development has been one of the really cool stories of the season over the last couple months.
Yeah. Back to the Bucks real quick.
I know that Tyrese Maxey has sort of been penciled in as the most improved player. Coby White, I'm not saying Tyrese won't win it. I'm not saying I wouldn't vote for Tyrese.
Coby's definitely earned ballot consideration.
Yeah. That's okay. All. Sorry.
Study those numbers. That's a fair point. Look, there was a lot of piling on Doc Rivers. There was a lot. The way he got the job, the lack of wins after he got the job.
He didn't help himself by some of the stuff he said.
Yeah, some of the stuff he says. Yeah, you know,
I would say a lot of it was just some of the insane things that Doc was saying. I love Doc.
Okay, well, whatever. It became very cool and trendy to pile on Doc Rivers. That's my point. What were the two main things that Doc was hired to do for the Bucks?
Defense.
Has he improved the defense? Well, hey, small sample size or whatever, but yes, they are number one by a significant margin since the All-Star break. That seems to be a pretty massive change from a team that was in the 20s when he was hired. And then I would argue the second biggest thing was to kind of get the Dame Giannis thing flowing, not have them be two kind of independent contractors, so to speak, within the starting lineup. And it's interesting to hear Damian Lillard talk about Doc, and he, you know, just basically saying like Doc comes in and it's like, wait, you guys don't have this in here? Man, we used to hate guarding that when you were in Portland. Basically just doing, because look, Giannis is going to be Giannis, right? You've got to get Dame to feel like he's himself. He's the guy who's made this massive transition, you know, moving and new franchise, new surroundings, you know, so on and so forth. And it's not like it's been some kind of linear thing with him, but there are certainly indications that he can get the best out of Dame.
Yeah. So for example, this is one of the basic things that Doc has done. And, you know, you're never going to hear X's and O's from me. I will get my circles run around me. But one of the things that they did in Portland, very effectively with a lot of times with Yusef Nurkic was set a screen very, very high, well outside the 3-point line. And Dame would come into it at speed and the big man was pulled up and Dame could shoot from anywhere inside 30 feet. And he would come off the pick with speed and with room to operate because it's very, very hard to bring extra bodies when you're that far away from the basket. It, you know, you're just inviting 4-on-3 play on the back of the play. And that was something the Bucks weren't doing. And so just as basic as, especially when Dame's in the game by himself, is moving that screener up to give Dame more of a play that he's run several thousand times in NBA games has helped him. Maybe it's helped him two possessions a game, but that's helped. On the defensive end, okay, Doc is, and Dave Yeager, who was hired to be his defensive, you know, coordinator, they know that they got a problem with their perimeter defenders. They're small, they're not particularly quick, and, you know, they're weak. Okay, so what do they have? They do have great interior defenders with great size.
Also, what did they go out and get? Like, they got Pat Bev. That he right. does solve some perimeter defensive issues.
I mean, I don't really agree, but well, okay. not.
You tell me Pat Bev's not a defensive pest? Stop.
Again, I think he's a pest in a lot of respects, but you know,
maybe helps a couple percentage points, right? But one of the things that the Bucks have done is that they have gotten their big men, specifically Giannis and Brooke Lopez, more involved and asking more of them and more, a little bit more movement and a little bit more coverage and using their, you know, help and recovery abilities. You know, there was a real key play in the fourth quarter of the Clippers game on Monday night where this exact thing happened. Brooke Lopez had come out away from the basket to help a little bit on the pick and roll. And because he is a superior defender and has great length, when Kawhi Leonard came around the pick and went to the basket, Brooke recovered and blocked the shot at the rim at a key point in the game where the Clippers were basically being taken to their knees. And that is, it was a big ask for him to cover the ground. He had to get out beyond the, I think in my memory at least, beyond the foul line or at least close to it, and then race Kawhi back. And he did. He made the play. And so, you know, those are the kind of scheme things. In addition to what I've been told, which are just, you know, better attention to detail and better operations and film sessions, shoot arounds, and
organization. I was going to say, all of this comes back to the Bucks are just much better organized. None of these things are revolutionary.
Right.
Right. And I'm not saying that to be critical of Doc, who has done a nice job, but like they are now just a much more organized group.
They don't have a head coach shows on the job.
That,
you
know, yes,
learning the roster, but the guy has a ton of experience, and they don't have a roster full of guys who are looking at the head coach learning on the job, thinking this guy didn't really know what he's doing, does he? So the players actually believe the stuff that they're being coached to do.
Yeah, it all comes down to that. It's just a much more organized group.
Listen, you give Giannis a few chances, he'll make a good head coaching hire.
What are you talking about? That was made by the front office.
Oh, that's right. Giannis had no clue. I think he heard about it when he walked in the gym one day.
I don't know if they can get to a point where they can beat the Celtics 4 out of 7, but they don't have to play them 4 out of 7. It's getting into a better position where they wouldn't have to play, at least not right now. They don't potentially have to play them 4 out of 7 until the conference finals if they continue to hold on to the 2. Let's see if they do. But the teams behind them are kind of battered. Mm-hmm. And well, when you have Giannis, the best player.
Yes, that was what I was going to say. They're not as good as the Celtics, but right. Their best player is the best player in that series. And if you walk in the series with the best player, you got a shot.
Not only that,
the Celtics don't really have a great option to guard him.
He's the best player, and he has championship experience, as do obviously some other guys on that roster. Also, while Doc, look, we can talk about some of the playoff failures. The man has championship experience. And then Damian Lillard hasn't, you know, been on a team that's broken through, has never won a conference finals game, much less gotten to the finals.
But
like, if the game's close, of the 10 guys on the floor, who do you trust the most with the ball in their hands at that situation? Bucks or Celtics?
And again, like, we're going to talk about this presumably after the game Thursday, but that's the question with the Celtics. The Celtics have every other question answered. The one they can't answer is in the final 5 minutes of a close game. How's it going to go? And if you're playing the Bucks, you got Dame on the other side. You like your chances with him. If you're playing Denver, you've got the Jokic Murray pick and roll. You like your chances with that. And that is the final thing that the Celtics are not going to be able to answer until we get to the playoffs. But that's the thing that we're going to have to wait to see.
Well, and you know what? They might not have to answer it in the playoffs.
Well, they might not.
I'm blowing everybody out by 50.
That's right. They might not. But that's the one, if you're looking for a hole in their team, where's the thing to poke at and say, this is where you have doubts about Boston. That's really the only thing now you can point to. It's like they go into those matchups, they don't have the best player because Jokic, Giannis are better than Tatum. And the clutch execution has not typically been great. So if you're the Bucks, you're saying, hey, we got the best player. We got Dame brought in to be a crunch time guy. This is what we think we could do. Now, if you're the Celtics, you can count. Well,
8-2.
Yes, right. Pat Bev. That's right. 8-2, Pat Bev. Now, we'll see that game against the Celtics in a couple weeks.
Bontemps is just being petty. Hey, we can respect our podcast competitors. You don't have to be all just nasty about this.
All right. Guys, what do you make of the fact that the Lakers are 3-1 against the Thunder after beating them on Monday night?
Tempted not to react to a small sample size. Understand that the Thunder were on a back-to-back last night and concerned about the matchup of the Lakers' size and physicality against the Thunder, who their biggest weakness in the non-experience category is that they aren't a big physical team. They are one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. And Anthony Davis he's feasted against the Thunder this year. So, you know, there is some concern there. And if I'm the Thunder, I hope the seeds don't play out to find out if that small sample size would continue.
Well,
in
the Thunder and the Wolves have been going back and forth in one, you know, and we'll see.
Here come the fighting Jokers.
Yeah, it's true. No, for sure. Denver is, Denver is running hot too. It's most likely that the Lakers are going to end up playing either the one or the two. But the Thunder have been.
Oh, Wendy says the Lakers are definitely coming out of the play-in.
I said it's most likely if they make it to the playoffs, it's going to be versus the one or two. That was a nice aggregation you just did on me there, though.
Well, hold on. What the hell else would it be?
It means they're not getting to six.
Get up to six.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they're most likely playing one or two if they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, the Lakers they have been playing well. 1-10 in the last 14. One of those losses is when LeBron took the extra day after the All-Star break.
He was dealing with ankle soreness, McMahon.
He took an extra day to deal with ankle soreness. My God, let's not get defensive.
I'm not.
What
I'm
are
just
you
telling
back
you.
In the Akron Beacon Journal? My gosh, Lord have mercy.
Just telling you.
I know the rubber ducks are honoring you, but please, man, you like come on. You don't have to get LeBron's back at any perceived slight here. but I think if you're looking at five down right now in the West, the Lakers are playing the best of that bunch. They're 9 right now, and they are a threat to move up. Like, you know, the Mavericks have the Pacers tonight. We'll see if they can have a get well win that they need. If not, the Lakers are breathing right down their necks, and they've got two superstars who have won a title together. So fresh off of West Finals, the bronze broom sweep, but still got to the West Finals. I think you've got to look at the Lakers as a legitimate threat as far as ninth place teams go.
I'm glad we're back to the place where we're just saying that the Lakers are going to roll through the playoffs again. I would say that this is a very concerning thing for the Thunder, in my opinion. This is the thing we have been concerned about with them all season, for as good as they are. They're extraordinarily small by every standard. We've talked a lot about the Josh Giddey thing. It did not work again last night. I don't quite want to say it wasn't good. Like, they're just not guarding him. Teams are just not guarding him at all. And I don't want to quite say it's unserious that he continues to start, but it's getting pretty close to that point. This is a team that has a chance.
Well, they're
to make
doing
it
a
really
lot of
deep.
Winning. So, but I agree that in a possession game in the playoffs where matchups mean everything, it's not serious to think that he would be able to be out there.
Well, and to me, they should be starting to prepare for making that kind of a run now, and having him continue to be out there in these situations right now in a starting lineup when I think we all agree. If they just run this way in the playoffs, to just have him start every game, it's going to end shorter than it probably should.
Okay, but
So what's your solution then? Because look, we're already talking about one of their big concerns is they are a small team. He is actually the second tallest starter. He's 6 foot eight. You know, we looked at the Gordon Hayward thing as, hey, maybe that gives you an alternative.
Well, he has not been doing much for them.
Fellas, he had a milestone moment last night. In his seventh game for the Thunder, he attempted his first three-pointer. It didn't go in. In 102 minutes, he scored 17 points and is 7 of 28 from the floor. In 102 minutes, he's been a nothing. I like Isaiah Joe. I like Cason Wallace. If you plug them in for Giddey, a small team's getting significantly smaller.
I will say that he did have their best plus minus of their starters yesterday.
I know. That's why I said it wasn't like by Giddey games. This wasn't, I didn't think it was on the bats. They made some plays as a cutter, but still, like, it doesn't, the bigger picture fit problem is there. I don't know, like, do you want to go a little bit bigger and more physical and put Kenrich Williams at the four? You know,
I want someone out there the teams are going to guard, because you're playing 4-on-5 on offense and it's just not sustainable in the playoffs. It's just not. And I understand there's a variety of reasons why they haven't gone that way, and that's fine. To me, they should be spending this final quarter of the season, A, trying to get the one seed, and B, trying to figure out the best way they're going to play in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Just having Josh Giddey be in the starting lineup for the next 20 games, when he's then not be in the starting lineup at some point during the playoffs, I would certainly hope, because it's not going to be something that's going to be sustainable at that point. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense. But we're getting away from the bigger picture issue, which is we have seen repeatedly when these guys play teams with size, they struggle. Because they're basically playing four guards. To your point, McMahon, Josh Giddey is their second biggest guy, and he doesn't really play that big. I know he's a rebounder, but he's a perimeter player.
The other options to guard are a lot smaller.
Exactly.
Well, I know, but the right. And the point is, whatever options they're rolling out there, they've got Chet Holmgren, who's on the small side for a center from a bulk standpoint.
Yeah.
And then they've got a bunch of guards out there with them, and it's going to be very difficult for them to go up against a team like the Lakers with all their size. And the Lakers, we saw this last year in the playoffs. Like, the Lakers are not a very good team in the aggregate, but they have very specific strengths that if they get very specific matchups, they can take advantage of. They got that matchup against Memphis. They got that matchup against Golden State. I think Golden State's been playing, frankly, significantly better lately than the Lakers have, who mostly have had a puff schedule, and they've played real teams they've lost.
Yeah, give or take a 52-point loss.
Yes, they also had won three in a row before that, and I think 5 out of 6 before that. Like, yes, they got smoked by the Celtics. But I think the Warriors in the aggregate are a more dangerous and better team than the Lakers. But because of the Lakers' size, if they get a matchup where they can play a smaller team and beat them up, and have LeBron get calls because LeBron is going to get calls, and have AD get calls because he's going to get calls, and just mash teams, they can win a series. But they need a very specific matchup to do that. And like, that's why Oklahoma City sitting there in the one seed for a team that very likely is going to be in the 9-10 and have to fight to the 8 to make the playoffs.
I'm not certain they're going to be 9-10, but go on.
Well, all the models have them in the 9-10, so I'll stick with that.
All the models are sitting courtside at Crypto. What are you talking about?
That's true. But I think this is the fact that game again. I know a second I have a back-to-back, like you said, but the fact that game went again the way it did for the Thunder, I think it shows the real weaknesses they have for as high as we are in their overall ceiling. And it shows once again that if the Lakers get the right matchups, they can be a dangerous team in specific matchups in the playoffs.
Well, court side is tough for McMahon. It's Crypto because there's a lot of tall women with short men. McMahon doesn't like that.
Listen, I got my woman. I ain't worried about the rest of them.
Just on principle.
Shout out to the IT department. goes about 5'5". Anyways, you got me rattled now. Oh, talking about the problems the Thunder have with physicality. You mentioned the front end of that back-to-back was that crazy game against the Suns. Well, how did the Suns get back into that game after being down so much while, Devin Booker was out with an ankle? Well, the primary reason is because 300-pound bruiser Jusuf Nurkić was just tossing everybody around and grabbed 31 freaking rebounds. I believe Chet has a pretty nasty black eye as a result of that matchup. Nurk definitely was flailing those big old logs that he calls arms around and smacked him in the head on one. How that wasn't a flagrant is a mystery. But point being, it's not just the Lakers as a threat. Like, you know, the Suns are a potential play-in or a team that could come out of the play-in or be even a 3-6 if the Thunder are a 3-seed. Now, the Thunder had, like, they went out and got Biombo off the scrap heap just to kind of give them a physical option at center. They went out and got Mike Muscala off the scrap heap to kind of give them a different option as a big man. By the way, this will shock you. Muscala's net rating with the Thunder last year before they moved him was +9.4.
Oh.
So he's a pretty easy, like, he, obviously he was there for a little bit. They know him. He knows the system, knows the team, whatever.
Again, another pick and pop big to play with Shea and space the floor. And frankly, play with Giddy some too. Like that, right. That's what you need. If you're going to have either one of them out there, somebody spacing the floor for him.
So they have made these, you know, minor buyout market type of moves to try to address the depth at center and kind of give them some options. But as far as really digging in and fixing the biggest flaw in that team, that's a summer project.
Yeah, swapping out Josh Giddey for a bigger player that doesn't compromise the way their offense runs. That's the final piece they need to find.
Chet's never going to, you know, he's not going to, you know, come in one training camp and suddenly weigh 275 pounds and be throwing guys around. But the way that guy approaches things, the way that he works, he's going to get progressively stronger over the next several years. So some of this will be addressed just with his growth and development and work in the weight room and those sort of things. They've clearly got one kind of glaring void on that roster, and they've got a lot of potential avenues to address it. And we'll see if they choose to take one this summer.
So speaking of schedules,
he'll figure something out. He's a smart fellow.
I'm sure they're working on it.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Speaking of schedule over the next week, the Lakers have a pivotal time here. So we mentioned that they're playing the Bucks on Friday at home. They have two games with the Kings in the next week and also a game with the Timberwolves. The Kings are...
Kings Wednesday at home in L.A., by the way.
Yes, and then the following Wednesday in Sacramento. The Kings are three games ahead of them in the loss column in the eighth spot. Getting to eight would obviously be a huge thing because you only have to win one playing game instead of two. The Kings are all over the place. They win some games that you don't think they're going to win. They lose games that you think they won't lose. Just in the last two games, for example, they had De'Aaron Fox was out with a sore knee. They went into Minnesota with a very impressive overtime victory. They come home and get up 20 on the Bulls, as we mentioned earlier, with De'Aaron Fox back in the lineup and blow the lead. They have now blown, I think, three 20-point leads this season. They have also, I think, had two or three 20-point comeback wins, which is sort of the epitome of their season. They're all over the place, bouncing back and forth. They are actually, there's a pretty remarkable record that is pretty close to falling. Domantas Sabonis has 43 consecutive double-doubles. The all-time record is 51 by Moses Malone.
I was going to say, it has to be a Moses Malone record.
Yeah, it's... can be done in the next couple of weeks. And I know that it's, there's stat inflation because of speed of game, but if that record falls, like, that would be pretty remarkable. So that's all gone on. The guy's been incredibly productive and effective.
And a bunch of those are triple doubles, damn near half of them.
Yeah, crazy. But they're all over the place. They're a very hard team to predict. They're really on pace. They won 48 games last year. They were the 3 seed. They're on pace to like win 46 or 47. They're not really worse off dramatically than they were last year, but now they're playing, trying to stay out of a 9-10 situation. I don't know what's going to happen to them. They got a lot going for them. They got a lot going against them. I don't know where they're going to end up. And these two games with the Lakers could be really important in this next week. Bontemps.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to be massive, you know, because again, you know, like you said, they're not really on a much different path than they were on last year from an overall standpoint. But you look at where the West is, it's much deeper overall this year. And as a result, they're down here, you know, in this morass of teams fighting for a play-in spot, as opposed to where they were last year, sitting in second in the West, second or third. I don't remember where that series ended up. I guess it was third, because Golden State was sixth and the Lakers were seventh. But yeah, like if you look at their projections for the season, as of right now, the Kings are projected to win 40, just under basically 46 games and finish eighth. Last year, I think they won 48 games and finished third. And like that, like right now, they're on pace to play the Thunder in the first round, assuming they make it out of the play-in, you know, or they might have to beat the one of the Lakers or Warriors to get out of the play-in.
And frankly, the other thing is, look, say it, the standings are the way they are right now. Are you picking the Kings to beat the Mavericks in a play-in game?
I mean, it's hard to pick them to beat anybody.
And then are you picking, if they don't, are you picking, now they beat home. But are you picking them to beat the Warriors or Lakers in a playing game?
No, I mean, I wouldn't pick them to beat anybody.
Seven in the West can easily be a ticket to the beach.
Yeah.
Especially, I think, for the Kings. I think the Kings, honestly, and like, I respect what they've done, especially since Mike Brown's been there. I think they are the least threatening team from 5 to 10 in the Western Conference.
Well, yeah, they're definitely the team anybody would pick and say, if you're lining them up, you would say, I'd rather play them over anybody except for maybe New Orleans, I think. Maybe.
But then, and New Orleans, as we say all that, New Orleans is the one who's in fifth. And, you know,
right. But I just, but you look at those two teams and like, you're not going up against Luka. You're not going up against Steph. You're not going up against LeBron. You're not going up against KD and Devin Booker, right? Like all those other teams at least have guys where you're like, man, I'm really worried about that guy. For as good as De'Aaron Fox is, for as good as Domantas Sabonis is, for as good as Zion is, for as good as Brandon Ingram is, you go into a series playing against those guys,
right?
It's just not the same fear factor level. And the Kings have deficiencies outside of that, where New Orleans is probably a little deeper. So I would, you know, it's sort of a toss up. I'd probably favor New Orleans. But yeah, like everybody's sort of eyeing it saying, man, we get Sacramento in the first round, or if we get Sacramento in the play-in, that's a much more palatable option than getting LeBron in a one-off, or Steph in a one-off, or Luka in 7 games, or KD in 7 games, or whatever.
I will say this about the Kings. They had an opportunity to improve their roster in the offseason, and they just kind of doubled down on what they had. They made the draft night trade with the Mavericks, gave up what was in that deal?
The 24th pick, and it was a salary dump by the Kings, dump Holmes. To create cap space, to create flexibility.
And that was Omax Prosper.
Omax Prosper. Yeah. Look, we'll see about him. He's not a factor in the NBA right now. He's the guy they hope can develop.
So who knows what the Kings would have taken there? And I'm not saying that they could have used that pick to get better, but they gave up their first round pick to dump salary to open cap space.
Yes.
They used that cap space to renegotiate and extend Domantas Sabonis.
Mm-hmm.
He gave them no discount in doing so. They gave the money to him. He is a great player. Their team didn't get better though, you know, and you know, the point of the renegotiations and extension is that they gave him money out from their salary cap that increased his salary immediately this year. He had contracted money for this year. They added money to it and then built off of it. And look, they got him locked in. So that was good. And then they re-signed Harrison Barnes and they said, you know, we're wagering on Keegan Murray to really improve, which he has shown signs of that. But this was in the West, which is an absolute arms race, they had an opportunity to improve their roster, whether it was straight through the draft or whether it was using that cap space in different ways. They elected not to. They brought their team back. They have spun their wheels and now they're way back in the standings.
Well, and you hit on Keegan Murray. Their bet was, hey, we've got a chance to be significantly better because this number four overall pick who had a really good rookie season can take a significant step forward and be the third star that they need. And I'm not going to sit here and say that Murray hasn't had a good season. He has not taken a star leap. He's averaging 15 points a game, a little less efficient, higher volume than last year. He is a very good young defender at 6'8". He gets their toughest defensive matchups, usually 1 through 4. He's an outstanding young player, but he's a far, far, far away from being a star.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's had a really good second year, and I think he's made meaningful improvements, and I think there's a lot to be excited about there. But at the end of the day, and I even didn't mind getting off of Rashawn Holmes money. I mean, again,
I don't mind getting off that, but what do you do with it?
Well, yes, that to me is like, I like trading the 24th pick to get off the Rashawn Holmes money.
Okay.
I agree totally. I'm doubling down on the Sabonis part. Like, if you're going to renegotiate and extend Domantas Sabonis now, you got to be getting a discount on that to some degree to better balance out your roster going forward, instead of just basically paying him a full max this year and moving forward. Because again, like Domantas, like this goes back to the whole Tyrese Haliburton trade discussion we've had for years now. He's a really, really, really good player, borderline all NBA player, all-star caliber player. You know, both he and Fox were obviously deserving candidates to be an all-star this year, didn't make it. But if he's one of your two best players, you're probably not winning a first round playoff series. Why? Because he's lost in the first round of the playoffs, I think, 5 times now.
Well,
second best player on the team.
I would say if he's one of your two best players and then there's a significant drop off to your third. And again, their hope was Murray would make it your three best player conversation. He's not there.
I think he's got a chance. I think he's got a chance to still do that. But again, it's to Brian's point. You had the ability to add more pieces to this team right now, and you didn't do it.
Yes, they did. They got JaVale McGee.
Yes, they got your boy JaVale. But I just, because this is the weird thing about sort of how things go in the NBA, right? Because again, they've taken steps forward in some respects from last year. They're going to have about the same season as last year, but on the heels of last year, especially if they don't make the playoffs or something like that, it's going to feel like this massive backslide.
Right.
When in a lot of ways, I don't think it is at all. It's just, this is the natural evolution of things and they have to try to figure out how to level back up again. But I don't think it's some failure of a season on their part.
And last year was them coming out of the freaking Sahara Desert.
You know,
we talked about the playoff drought that was old enough to have a driver's license.
Right.
But you break that as a third seed. And then, you know, you look around and say, okay, you got a couple all-star type guys, got this number four overall
pick. Which they didn't get, though. They very upsettingly didn't get. They were all-star type guys, but they weren't
all-star caliber players.
They didn't get them because they were sort of, I don't remember exactly where they were at the time, but last year they were clearly at the top of the conference, and this year they were sort of in the middle somewhere.
Yeah. But for the first time in forever, the Kings entered a season with expectations. And that tells you, that speaks to the progress that's been made, that they could win 46, 47 games, and this season could be considered somewhat of a disappointment. But they're no longer the Kangs, the K-A-N-G-E-Z.
Right.
Well, maybe they'll beat the Lakers both these games, and we'll have a different opinion of them, and maybe they will lose, because more likely they will probably split. They'll probably win the game in LA and probably lose the game at home.
One of those three things will happen. They'll either win them both, lose them both, or split them. We'll find out.
Is that an official prediction?
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes it rains. All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast and watching it if you watch it on YouTube. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to Bontemps, who's traipsing around North America this week. And thank you to McMahon, who is still licking his wounds from his championship game loss. But you come back better.
Hey, I do want to make one thing clear. I've got no problem with the short fellas getting beautiful tall women. Just officiating NBA games is the only thing.
Just not having jobs.
No, just officiating NBA games. That's the only place I'm trying to hold the
short
fellas
back. Not having certain kind of jobs.
All right? That's all I got to say.
All I will tell you is that in the last week, several people, longtime NBA type people, have come forward, much to my surprise, Bontemps, to support McMahon's position.
Listen, blind squirrels find a nut every now and then.
Granted, got some allies on something for a change. These gentlemen were all significantly taller than me, but I was like, I couldn't believe this. Just out of nowhere, just like, by the way, I'm with McMahon. Just a silent wink and nod, thumbs up. I was like, all right, do not encourage him.
All those anonymous important people, I appreciate the support, and adios amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.